Welcome to the Out of the Woods podcast, the top five headlines threat hunters need to be thinking of this week.
Hello everyone, I'm Lee Arkanal, and this is your Out of the Woods headlines. And normally we do a top five headlines that you need to know, but I'm flying solo today. So what I'll be doing is I'll be discussing, instead of five different headlines, five different starting points for your threat hunt. Now, there's plenty of ways to threat hunt, but when it boils down to what we found out through our research and our development on our side, we found out that really there's five different good starting points to really begin your threat hunt. And it all revolves around research, or really your cyber landscape and what you're really worried about. What you could be worried about could be a certain malware. It could be a certain APT group, whatever industry you're in. When we're talking about anomalies and uncommon activity in your environment, and ultimately, and really the general broad term of TTPs and behaviors, that kind of overlaps into every single aspect of threat hunting. Once again, it normally starts with where you start your research, or really what you're worried about. So let's first start with malware. Now, if you're focusing, or if you have a malware focus for your threat hunting execution, normally what you're worried about is malware that is designed to do specific things. And there's multiple things out there. There's stealers or credential stealers that just focus on stealing credentials from browsers, from stored documents on in your environment. There's like keyloggers where, it's sitting there just listening, watching you type, possibly has access to your screen recording and microphone and video. Or if we always think about the impact of things, we can talk about decryptors encryptors, ransomware, and wipers. Now, why would you be focused about these things? Well, normally the malware is the final payload in the attack. And whenever it's executed and triggered, that's the thing that is going to accomplish the goal for the adversaries. Now, you may think if it is a stealer, then isn't it executing and just laying quietly? Versus ransomware that's going to destroy your entire encrypt your entire environment. Well, yeah, it's the same idea. They're still accomplishing the goal, because once that malware executes and it's capable of doing so and getting the information that they want, it's still execution. It's still meeting the goal. Not all goals end with a machine being wiped or a machine being encrypted. But there's things to think about with that. If you are focused on malware, from a threat hunting perspective, what I encourage you not to be focused on are the IOCs, the hash values that come associated with it, the domains that are associated with the, if there is C2 activity or command and control activity. But I want you to focus on the behaviors of that malware. Once that malware executes, what are the things that it does? Does it modify registry keys? Does it create processes? Does it make network connections? And so on. So once you focus on these things, and then you start looking at the common factors between other pieces of malware of the same type, then you can start getting a better idea of building a general hunt query that will start capturing this activity. If you think about, hey, then, that's kind of hard. If we have all these different stealers that are designed to do the same thing, but they're going to do it differently, how do we capture that activity? Well, if you think about how a stealer, or what's involved with a stealer, what's involved with a keylogger, normally the term access comes to mind. These credential stealers are accessing something in your environment. They're accessing a browser. They're accessing an Etsy password file, you name it. So when you boil it down to that, instead of just saying, we got to look for keylogger execution, now you're getting into the behavior of the malware. And while you think that may be like a Herculean task or might be quite difficult, we aid you in that hunt. If you come to the Hunter platform and you're searching for malware to look at, we have behaviors of malware. We've tagged certain malware that act and behave in such ways. Now, going back to the idea of the access being the issue with keyloggers and credential stealers, we have to identify what directories or what locations these malware are accessing. And once we identify that, and once you identify in your environment what's crucial to your success and what you don't want accessed, then you can start getting a better idea of, hey, how do I build this hunt query? And how do I make it effective across all the malware or all the malware types that I'm worried about? Now, you can't, I would say, one giant query for all malware may be a disservice. But if you start thinking about the other activities, such as registry key modifications, you know, what, or talking about the Black Hat or ALF-V ransomware that's made the headlines recently as well, is that in the past, what it's done is it's modified a registry key that deals with the amount of connections or files that a server service can access. And what Black Hat ransomware was designed to do, and I think it's still designed to do the same thing, is that it accesses a registry key that deals with this, the amount of files that it can access at the same time, and it maxes it out. Now, it pushes it up to 65,535. But why is this significant? Well, the malware is modifying a registry key, and it's this specific registry key. So if you're concerned about ransomware, or specifically the Black Hat ransomware, you can audit this registry key. And if you audit this registry key, then you can start getting into the visibility of, hey, it's being touched, or hey, it's being accessed or modified. And that registry key specifically includes the values control set, services, landman server, and parameters. Why do we look at that? Why do we even mention that? Well, we've already created a query in a hunt package that contains that information because it's a behavior. Now, it's a behavior associated with the Black Hat ransomware, but it can also be used by other ransomwares. And if we know anything about the ransomware community, it's that they are actually really well-oiled. They clearly communicate a lot with each other because they work together. Because the idea with ransomware is to get into an environment, smash and grab, get the money, and get out. So if they can make more money by working with the other groups around them, why not? Why not share behaviors that are successful? Why not share techniques that are successful? And these are the things we're looking for. So we're not just saying, look for blackhat.exe executing on your environment. We're looking at how that malware behaves. And once again, it all starts off with what are you worried about and what's our focus? But that's just a high-level version of malware. Once again, looking at the behavior of the malware and what it does after it's executed versus just the presence alone, which would be IOC hunting or IOC scanning hoping that you can find the malicious file name or the malicious hash versus the malware behaviors itself. So moving on, if our focus isn't malware and we want to focus on certain APT groups, how are we going to do that? Why would we focus on certain APT groups? Well, if we're in an industry, if we're in a geopolitical or a geolocation that is heavily targeted by different APTs, if we're in a certain country that is targeted by other APT groups, that might be our biggest concern. If you think about APT groups, we like to call them advanced persistent threats. Granted, I think the term AP or advanced persistent threat is commonly overused. But if you think about like state-sponsored groups that are actually APT groups and are like truly sophisticated with their attacks and how they operate, you can really see the difference. Cybercrime groups, yes, they're persistent because they want their money, they want to attack anyone, but they're not going to take the same finesse as a state-sponsored group would. But either way, focusing on APT groups gives you that opportunity, if that is your biggest threat, to focus on things like what have they done in the past to be successful. And once again, back to the TTPs and behaviors. There's so much threat intel out there that you can go back and look at examples of the same APT group that you're focused on that have been documented in the past. Now, if you think about the attacks, you can ask yourself two questions. What changes and what stays the same? The techniques that they use in the first part or in the first attack versus the last attack may change a lot because as an adversary or as an adversarial group gains traction and gets more experience, then they're going to do things a different way that may be more efficient and may be more effective. Whereas, like, if you think about good old script kiddies just hammering lines away and trying to make their code work or trying to make commands work as much as possible and just as messy as possible, that kind of sticks out. But if we're focused on APT groups, looking at what changed and what stayed the same is very important, because when it comes down to what changed, there's a lot that falls in line, and I don't want to be beat a dead horse here, but it's very important to stress that the things that change from attack to attack are your IOCs. What's the hash of the malware? What's the malware name? What's the IP address that the attack is coming from? What stays the same is the tactics, techniques, and procedures that they're exhibiting, the locations on your machine and in your environment that they're targeting, and what artifacts or where they're dropping their files in, which would be your artifact location. Where can we find the IOCs and what artifacts are they going to leave behind that are consistent? Looking at Volt Typhoon, they like to use WMI for internal discovery and enumeration. They like to use living off the land binaries and PowerShell encoded commands. So while the PowerShell encoded command that they execute may change, which really is an indicator of compromise in its own sense, if you just focus on PowerShell encoded command execution being done, then you can start getting an idea of how this operates. I'm giving a plug to Volt Typhoon simply because they've made the news lately. If you are focused on this group, feel free to check the Hunter platform. We just let out a whole collection surrounding the behaviors on packages that cover the behaviors exhibited by these groups. But you'll notice that we're never focusing on IOCs, because just because they use malicious.exe one attack doesn't mean they're always going to use malicious.exe the next. But where they drop it, where they execute it from, where they gain their persistence, that may all stays the same simply because they're human. At the end of the day, if you're focusing on APT groups, you're focusing on human behavior and how that looks once they're in your environment. Once the adversary has hands on keyboards, they are going to follow the path of least resistance. They're going to use living off the land binaries that they've used in the past. They're going to issue commands that they've issued in the past because it's comfortable, it works, and it's easy. If you're able to hunt for this activity and be able to identify it and stop it, then you make life a little harder. Then you make them get out of their comfort zone and have to do things differently, which ultimately could end the attack altogether. But that's enough for APT groups. Now let's talk about industries. Now, industry is kind of like a higher level, bigger umbrella than specific malware and specific APT groups. Why? Because if you are an electric industry, you may be threatened by certain APT groups, and you may be threatened by certain malware. If you think about, what was it, the Ukraine attack on, or the Russian attack on the Ukraine electric power grid, it was the same threat group, which was the SandWorm team, and it was the same goal that was being used. Now, when we talk about the malware, we're not talking about a specific name, but we're talking about a specific type. The Russians deployed wipers into the electric grid to make sure that tried to break everything so that the electric company could not produce any electricity, which hampered anything or almost everything in Ukraine. So they really shut them down for a large portion of the country by wiping all the data and wiping all the information from the computers and everything. Now, when we focus on the APT groups and the malware, we kind of take the same approach, but we have to look at more specifics, really. So if you're focusing on, hey, I'm in the electric industry, I'm worried about this group, and I'm worrying about this type of malware, what you can do is almost do like a Venn diagram overlap, where you can say, all right, if I want to prioritize and get the quickest wins, what do I do? So you can take a look at how the group is operated in the past, take a look at the malware it's used in the past, identify the TTPs and behaviors, identify the command line arguments that have been issued, and then do like an overlap. Because if you do discover that overlap, that might be your quickest win to say, you know what, we're going to focus on these TTPs because they're very prevalent and they're very commonly used by both the malware and the group. And we're going to research how to identify that. And once again, once you find the tool, once you found the living off the land binary, once you identify the intent of the arguments that are issued, then that gives you a better heads up or a better standpoint of where you can or what you can do and what you can search on to find the activity, whether that be persistence, whether it be impact, whether that be execution. That's all up to you whenever it comes down to it. But that helps with prioritization and really focusing or conducting threat hunting from an industry perspective. Because when you're in industry, I mean, yeah, cybercrime is going to be around. Ransomware, you know, it can affect everyone. But you might not have the financially motivated APT groups that are coming after you. You might not have the espionage. More than likely you will. Your threat landscape is unique to your industry. But how you approach threat hunting for it is up to you and is different in each industry and approach. Second to last is the almost anomaly approach. Now, this is where you focus, or it's totally agnostic to malware and APT groups. It's totally agnostic to industries. It's you as a threat hunter creating a hypothesis or asking yourself a question of what would look interesting or abnormal in my environment. Now, this is probably the toughest out of all five threat hunting perspectives, simply because no one can answer this question for you except the people in your environment. Now, there are easy wins if you want to say like, oh, well, you know what? Do we allow RDP public facing? Yeah, that might be the answer might be no. Like, no, we absolutely do not allow that. So if you say, well, you know what? Let's take a look at that. Let's see if we can find port 3389 being accessed by IPs that are outside our geolocation. Now, if you're a global entity, that might be a little harder. But whenever you want to think about like living off the land binaries, then you might think about, okay, well, what processes aren't executed in our environment very often? Do we see more PowerShell usage than Windows Command Shell? Does anyone use Windows Management Instrumentation or WMI? Does anyone use that in our environment? Or instead of taking a processes view, you can take a look at a device perspective. What's a baseline for my servers? What's a baseline for my endpoints? Or what's a baseline for my, you know, domain controllers? What living off the land binary do I see on each? What's not common and what's common? And then you can start working through that process and that research or that internal research that, once again, no one can answer for you. But at the same time, you have to learn a lot about your environment to find the anomalies. A good example is PowerShell encoded command. Some organizations don't use a PowerShell encoded command at all. That's a complete anomaly in their environment, and if it triggers, it's malicious or suspicious at least. Some environments really rely heavily on PowerShell encoded commands simply because that's how they process things. That's how everyone operates in their environment. So looking for a suspicious or malicious PowerShell encoded command might look completely different than a normal hunt. It might involve a lot of decoding of those PowerShell encoded commands to figure out what are the actual contents and commands that are being issued. But the anomalies is one of the toughest threat hunting perspectives out there, simply because it's mostly relying on your tribal knowledge of the environment you work in. And finally, we're going to talk about TTBs and behaviors as the starting point for your threat hunting. Now, this one overlaps with everything I've already talked about, but whenever we're talking about TTPs and behaviors, a common term that we think about is MITRE attack coverage. Because I know that's a question a lot. I've heard a lot about it. I've even been asked it multiple times of what's our attack coverage? And at this point, you're expected to answer, whoever's answered the question, manager, director, so-and-so, that we have X amount of percentage covering the MITRE attack, and these are our visibility gaps, and here's all that. At the same time, while that's valuable, sometimes that question or that answer really provides a false sense of security. I could write a query or potentially write a query for like 99% of the MITRE attack matrix that's out there and say we have 99% coverage, but the question is it effective coverage? Is it really looking for the intent or what I think it's looking for? So whenever you start getting asked that question about coverage, this is where threat hunting from a TTP and behavior aspect really shines. If we're going to drive that way, let's drive hard. So what are we talking about? We're talking about tactics, techniques, or sub-techniques. We're talking about behaviors that I exhibited. And when we talk about behaviors and tactics, we're talking about command line arguments with tools. We're talking about payload location. We're talking about protocols being used for network connections or C2 servers or C2 communication, and so on. So we're talking about all these different technologies that exist already and how adversaries can abuse them. So going back to the anomaly section, you can say, well, you know what? We're looking for RDP being used. Is that weird in our environment? From a TTP perspective, we're saying, all right, how can we look for RDP being abused? And that could be the remote desktop protocol, the default port being modified. We can look at RDP being enabled through a living off the land binary, such as RDP being enabled through a registry key modification, and so on. So there's a lot of different ways that you can approach the idea or the tactic, technique, or procedure or behavior of RDP, not just port 3389 making a connection, but how are they enabling it? How are they allowing it to be, is a firewall being modified to allow RDP connections being made and so on. But these are all things, these are all tactics and techniques that adversaries exhibit to reach their goal once they're inside your environment. So if they are gaining persistence by allowing or by modifying a registry key that now enables RDP, how are you going to hunt for them? What are you going to look for? And once again, those are those artifacts that you're looking for. If it is a registry key being modified, then you're looking for a certain registry key. And really, all this research and all these TTPs and behaviors, what it boils down to is finding the human aspect behind the attacker. And that's why we've done all this work. We've done all this research. We've tried to make life easy by identifying these tactics and finding common tactics, techniques, and procedures. And if they are worthy enough, creating a hunt package surrounding them so that whenever you do come up with an idea, whenever you do want to research a TTP or behavior, you can come to the Hunter platform. You can simply throw in your term, or you can search using the MITRE filter or the MITRE filters that we have on the side, the goals, the threat names, threat categories, and threat industries, and so on. But we've tried to make that research side easier for you by already doing the work, already providing contextualized information, and already providing you a usable query that you can start your hunt with. Now, these queries aren't, or what we do when we create these queries, they're not one size fits all, because there's always that possibility of something that we think is suspicious or malicious being okay in your environment. We understand that there's going to be false positives out there. So what that means for your end is that you're going to have to sit there and work through these queries and say, you know what, we ran them, we have all these results, we have a bunch of false positives. How can I exclude this and make this query more effective in my environment? Which, once again, that's like going back to the anomalies. You have to do that yourself. You have to do that in your environment, because you have a better understanding of what's normal, what's not, than we do of your environment. But when it comes to tactics, techniques, and procedures and behaviors, you're really looking for the human aspect. You're really looking for the tools that adversaries like to use to accomplish their goals and why they are using them versus, and I hope I stress this enough, but versus looking for the same IOC that you found in an Intel report in your environment, or the same hash, file name, IP address, etc., and trying to hunt using that. Because if an IOC is associated with an APT group, that's great, but it's so point in time that by the time you read the Intel report, they've probably changed their IP space, or they've already changed the hash values, updated the code of their malware. What they haven't done is change the functionality of the malware. They haven't changed their tactics, techniques, and procedures when they go through an attack. So once they get, just think about once the adversary does get in your environment, they're probably going to do the same things again. Why? Because it works, and so on. So when you're in an industry, normally the threat landscape is going to stay the same depending on the adversaries and the malware that exists, and so on. But I hope this helped. I hope you now have a better understanding of different perspectives whenever it comes to threat hunting, because there's a lot of different hypotheses that you can create based on the threat intel that's out there. I hope this helped. I hope that you can check out the Hunter platform and really see how we've tried to make things easy for you whenever you are taking these different starting points in your threat hunting journey. That's all I have for today. If you did like this podcast, and if you are into threat hunting and you want more of a, I guess, community feel, come join us for our live podcast on April 4th. Join us on Discord from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We always have a cocktail that is cybersecurity themed, and we like to bring a couple interesting artifacts to the table, discuss them. We ask a couple questions. Really, what we really, really enjoy doing is taking feedback and questions from the community and the people that are actually participating in the chat. Not only do we like to talk about threat hunting, but we love to hear other stories from the trenches, other experience that other people have, because that's what makes us grow, and that's what helps us grow as a community and as individuals. But for now, I'm Lee Argonal. Thank you for joining in for our top five threat hunting headlines. I am Lee Argonal. Have a wonderful day and happy hunting.
Thanks for listening to the Out of the Woods podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss an episode. For more information or to connect with Cyborg Security, check us out online at www.cyborgsecurity.com and follow us on social media. We'll see you next time.